We welcome you back to Open Court with Fairfield basketball coach Chris Casey. The Open Court podcast is presented to you by Connecticut Basement Systems. Larry Janeski's Connecticut Basement Systems is the all things basement-y company. Basement waterproofing, basement finishing, foundation, structural repair, humidity and mold control, and nasty crawl spaces too. Call Connecticut Basement Systems today at 866-268-9002 for all things basement-y. Along with the coach, I'm Bob Huesler. Great to be back with you. I'm here, of course, with my broadcast partner, the former Fairfield great, the Hall of Famer Joe DeSantis. And the wait is over. The Stags' new season is here. Can it be an encore season? Matching or surpassing 24 wins, replacing over 2,000 points, replacing close to 800 rebounds, replacing over 400 assists from last season's team. Coach, it'll be a challenge, but it's an exciting challenge, isn't it? And I would open up by asking you, how are things coming together so far with that in mind, that you have a lot of production to replace?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've lost a lot. that's kind of the climate of college basketball now. You're either going to lose it through graduation, you're going to lose it through portal or transfer. So there's a lot of teams kind of going through that. Now, we've lost some significant numbers, like you just remind me of, Bob. I appreciate that. Thank
I knew you.
You
would.
Really appreciate it. You want to run that list again for me? Or you,
be the last time we bring it up.
Yeah, no. But you know what? I think a couple things. I tend to try to lean towards the positive aspect of everything. The first thing is we have a good group. I think it's a talented group, top to bottom. There's going to be a period of time here where they're trying to figure out what we're doing. They're trying to figure me out. They're trying to figure each other out. They're trying to figure out where they fit. We've made some progress with that in the preseason, obviously, and we need to play some games to further figure it out. For myself, you know, obviously I would have preferred to keep guys that we lost. You know, they were very, very good players and good people too, but I certainly wish them well in their new endeavors and their new homes. I still communicate with all of them. But for me, I look at it as, okay, so you don't have a team with six or seven returners where the returners are teaching each other and it maybe takes a little bit of a load off the coaching. So for me, it just amps me up a little bit more because now I have to reteach everything to everybody, every detail, try to figure out, you know, what to tweak to try to adjust to our personnel, but yet still play the same style. So it really keeps you, for lack of a better word, alert as a coach. You know, it makes you come in ready to coach. And I kind of like that, you know, because that's the thing I love about basketball. I love to coach. So I kind of look at the positive side of that also.
Is there anything in your career that you can use as a frame of reference? At first blush, I would imagine you've never encountered a situation quite like this where you are almost rebuilding a team from scratch. Now, I say that while knowing you do have some key returnees, and we'll be getting into all of that. But at any point in your coaching career, do you have any frame of reference that you could say, okay, I've been through this, and this is how I can approach it?
Yeah, not as a head coach. The one year I can recall, I was an assistant at St. Peter's College for Ted Fiore. And this was back in the early 90s. And in 91, we had a terrific team. We had seven seniors. I want to say we won like 22 games. We won the conference tournament, went to the NCAA tournament, played Texas in the first round. And it was a terrific team, but it had seven seniors. And they played all the minutes, scored all the points, got all the rebounds. So it was a rebuild right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it took us some years. And 5 years later, we were back in the NCAA tournament in 95 right. With a team. So that's really the only point I had seen that. But I've never experienced it as a head coach. But, you know, it really, Bob, it falls into the is what it is category. You got to figure it out, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can't spend time pointing fingers or complaining about it. You mm-hmm. spend your time trying to figure it out. Yep. And that's the way to approach it.
Chris, people that know you, and we learned quickly last year, I mean, we've known each other a long time, but to see you around the players, you're essentially the king of positivity. Now, today you were a little on the kids in practice, son. Bob and I looked at each other. So I'm going to say something here. I think you're downplaying. I think it's a brutal mess to coach now. Okay? Let's be honest with you, all right?
You want to read that list again, Bob?
I think it's a brutal mess because you're telling me how it's, and I appreciate this and I admire it, that you're taking on this challenge and it's a positive thing to do that. But you got kids now chasing money, all right, when they transfer, but also chasing minutes. So even though you lose guys in the past, like you said at St. Peter's, you're bringing in high school guys. Now you're bringing in transfers. And I'm not going to name names, but all these guys want to play. All these guys want to score points because they probably didn't maybe when they were at their previous school. So I got to believe this is going to be hard for you to develop chemistry, not just because you got new players, but because you got transfers who want to do that next. I don't think they're going to be patient. I don't mean to start this off as Debbie Downer, but it's got to be tougher for you.
You're not. No, it's a great point, Joe. And it's obviously hard.
Yeah.
You know, when you're starting, Division I college basketball is hard to begin with. And then when you're starting with a brand new team, and as you said, you know, we had 8 open scholarships on April 1st when we got back from the CBI. So you're not going to go into the high school ranks and into the portal and recruit mediocre guys. You want to try to get the best players you can get. And you're right. They all want to come in and they all expect to play. It's an instant gratification world. You know, you put it in a microwave, it's heated up and you eat it, you know? That's part of it, you know? And I have to be aware of that in coaching. And I also, you know, part of my job is I have to find a way now to keep all of these guys together and make them understand that, you know, you might be 6 minutes on Tuesday and we might need you for 26 on Friday, you know, and you have to be prepared for that. I think part of it too, Joe, is when you go into the portal and you're recruiting and you're not going to be perfect, but you have to do the best you can to find good people. That's part of the talent evaluation, especially nowadays. And it's important that they have some bounce back and perseverance in them and ability to handle adversity. And I don't know that you're truly going to know all those things until you coach a guy, but you have to do the best you can to figure out that part of it too.
We're going to promise our listeners that we're soon going to get into the individual personnel. We're going to go in player by player. We'll go through it quickly, but there are so many players to learn about, albeit right now on paper and what you've seen in practice. We'll know soon enough starting on Monday with Rhode Island. But just furthering one more point about what we were just discussing. You know, the old model, which has been completely incinerated, was you recruited players out of high school. They get to know you pretty early in that recruiting process. And normally when they commit, it's because they like the head coach in great part. And you get to know them pretty well during the recruiting process. Now you bring in players who you haven't recruited, at least initially. You are getting to know them on the fly. They are getting to know you on the fly. So now that we're close to opening day, how is that dynamic? Are they learning more about you, or are you learning more about them? What are the surprises in that process in terms of the feeling out process between player and coach?
Yeah, it's both, Bob. It's both. You know, I will say this. When we recruit, whether it's out of the portal in high school and especially out of the portal, we're calling everybody and asking about mm-hmm. the young man in terms of I want to know what his makeup is, you mm-hmm. know? Now, you know, unless you know somebody really well, you may not get a completely truthful answer, you know, but you have to make those calls. I thought it was a little bit odd was, you know, a lot of the guys we had going to portal, I got virtually little to no phone calls wow. on. And that seems to be what's happening in this space. So I kind of know a little bit about each of them going into it. The process of recruiting is a little more like speed dating, so they don't know a lot about me, but they kind of know a little bit, you know, from visits and recruiting phone calls. So that process is ongoing when you have this kind of roster turnover. And I think it goes through the whole year, you know, because you really find out about a person when things get hard, when there's adversity. Mm-hmm. That's when you really find out about a person. And my thing right now, and Joe, you alluded to practice today, and, you know, my evaluation of practice today was I thought we played very, very hard. I thought our energy and our effort was really good. We were sloppy, and that's where I got on them, and I didn't want to be sloppy, you know. Part of that is we've spent a lot of time the last 2 weeks on defense, more so than we usually do, and the defense is kind of amped up, and it's gotten better. And our offense in practice today did not respond to that. They did yesterday, did not today, you know, to the amped up pressure and maybe the, you know, trying to take you out of things. So that's where I kind of got on. I don't want to be sloppy with the basketball. You know, it's important to me to try to get a shot up every time down the floor. But I think that process is going to happen throughout the year, Bob. You know, and that's fine with me. You know, I welcome that. You know, I want these guys to, you know, feel like they have a relationship with me, and I want to have a relationship with them. But there's also going to be a line where they understand this is what we expect of you, and this is the bar that we set for you, and I'm going to coach you as such. And I think they understand that at this point.
Competition. You have, again, from where we sit, numbers, a lot of talent on this Fairfield roster. Yet it all eventually has to assimilate and gel. At this point, with just several days to go before the season opener, how competitive right now is it for those position battles for minutes, which every player wants?
Yeah, I think it's very competitive right now, you know, and I'm unsure, you know, about who's passed who and who's maybe moved into the top 10 and out of the top 10. I think we have a lot of guys that are here right now. And for those of you listening, I'm drawing basically a straight line with my hand. And I mean that in a good way because they're, you know, in that straight line at a pretty decent level. What I need is three or four to emerge, obviously, above that level. And we're still in the process of that. And I don't know, maybe that doesn't happen. Like, you know, we scrimmaged on Saturday and we played five in, five out every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was great for our team. Our team unity in that and the energy level was terrific. You know, nobody played less than 12 minutes. Nobody played more than 25. Now, I'm not saying we're going to play that way, but that's more an explanation of the point we're at right now. So I have to kind of see how it develops from here. You know, you're going to see some guys perform a little better under the lights. Maybe some guys don't perform as well, but that's yet to be determined. So, and right now, they all have to get out there for some minutes until I figure that out, until that becomes apparent based on numbers, based on understanding of what we're doing, based on production. So we're kind of in that process right now. And what we need is we need games. That's what we need. And that's what's going to further help us determine that.
So, again, I'm continue to go back into the past where you would recruit for a couple of spots, a couple of needs, and you would fill in where you needed it. Now you bring in 8-9 guys, and the one thing that Bob and I talked watching a few practices is you have depth. So if you have depth and you're still looking for a guy to emerge, and I hate to do this because I've said it on our broadcast. I've been following basketball at Fairfield since they recruited me in 74. Fairfield's never had four guards as good as the four you had last year. How you're going to need – are you going to play differently? Now, you already play fast offensively, and today I saw you working a little bit on the press. Do you feel that since – I'm making this statement, you kind of alluded to it, you don't have that go-to guy or two yet like you did last year. Do you feel you're going to need to develop – offense through your defense and maybe press a little more, play even faster than you have?
Yeah, you know, that's part of what I want to be able to do. And part of trying to figure out who you can go to is letting them go a little bit in practice, like running things for a certain guy and seeing what he does with it. We did that a little bit in half-court offense today. So we'll continue to do that. But, yeah, that's part of it is defensively, I think – we're maybe a little quicker than we were last year, you know, and I think we maybe can pressure the ball a little bit better than we did last year. So I want to try to, you know, teams score in different ways. And we shot the heck out of the ball last year from three.
Right.
You know, maybe we don't make 10.5 threes a game. Maybe we make 8, but we get to the foul line 6 more times, you know, and maybe get one more bucket in transition and an off more offensive rebound, you know, and that makes up for what you didn't get on the 10 threes. Style-wise, we're going to play the same. Like, I want to play fast. I want to get up and down the floor. And defensively, I'm, you know, in my heart, I'm a pressure guy. Like, I like
that. But are you going to press more? Is it going to be apparent?
Yeah, not, you know.
When John Jay scores the opening basket, are you going to get up in their face and go 40 minutes?
I think some of that depends on how the other team plays. If you have teams that take it out of the net, throw it in quick and go, and right. if you're pressing those teams, you just get caught opening up the floor, and it makes no sense to do it. Teams that don't throw it in, yeah, we're going to pick them up full court. And, you know, we'll trap, but it'll be conservative trap. Like, it's Division I basketball. Guys can play, you know, and I don't want to open the floor up and just, you know, make guys who are average players good players because you're giving them open looks or open shots. So we'll do some of that. I'm hoping we can have our defense was good last year. I'm hoping we can maybe push the intensity level up a little bit because we have more guys that we can throw at people. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at last year, like Jasper, Jalen, and Caleb. I mean, they're out there 33, 34 minutes.
Right.
And to ask them to pick up full court, turn them, mm-hmm. pressure the ball, get it. It's hard to do that, you know, and their offensive production was certainly good enough to, you know, have them do that some of the time, but not all the time. This team may be a little bit different than that. But, again, that's yet to be determined. We need games to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. All right, as promised, it's personnel time. And let's start it off by addressing health matters. I know you had some players who, coming into this season, were dealing with various aches, pains, injuries. Top of that list, Matt Curtis. I know he was dealing with, I believe it was an elbow injury that we can talk about, Chris. Where is he at right now, and what is the prognosis as far as that elbow injury is concerned?
Yeah, he's the only guy right now that's out, and you know Matt has an elbow injury, and right now he's in rehab for it. We're trying to get the healing process done through rehab, so he's got a few more weeks of that, and then he'll be reevaluated, okay. And then there'll be a determination from that point what'll happen with him. I'm really hoping that we get him back. Obviously, I mean, the guy won two games for us in the CBI last mm-hmm. year. So he was practicing really well. And I don't know if you've seen him recently, but he's changed his body completely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hopeful to get him back, but that remains to be seen. We have to go through these next few weeks and see what he does.
So I hate to put a date on it. He's going to be out for a couple, three, 4 weeks. First
yeah.
month?
Yeah. There's a few weeks. He's got a few more weeks on that. So we'll see.
He looks great. Right now, we've seen him at practice. Just wanted to see where he is now as compared to at this point last year when he was a freshman and lit it up early in the season as a freshman. We're talking about Mike Rogan, who had the torn labrum, and then he had to have that surgically repaired. So just as I just said, we've watched him. He looks good. But as far as you're concerned, where is he this year compared to this point last year, and what can he bring to this team?
Yeah, he's off the injury. He really just started playing contact in the middle of the summer. And he's progressed well. He gives us another guy that can shoot the basketball. He can play multiple positions. He's starting to rebound the ball better. You know, he's a little older now. He's become a little more physical, so he's rebounding the ball better for us. You know, Mike's going to play, and Mike's going to help us in a bunch of spots, and we're going to need him to shoot the ball well for us. And then guard and rebound. So, you know, that's going to be important for him to be out there on the floor. So I expect him to help us, yes.
Okay, Matt Curtis, Mike Rogan, returnees. Let's get into the new guys, and there are a lot to talk about. And we'll start with Kyle Jenkins. I bring him up because he has sat out some of the practices we have attended, and I know he sat out the scrimmages. But we saw him out there today. He looked pretty darn good to us. He looked healthy and ready to go. What was it, just maintenance, just taking it easy as far as easing back on his practice load?
Yeah, just a little bit of maintenance. You know, he was very good in the first scrimmage that we played. He did not play in the second scrimmage, and he's kind of practiced in and out. But he's, you know, he didn't miss any games last year at Lafayette. And, mm-hmm. Really missed practices, so I expect him to be fine. And he does contribute a lot to us. He's a very much a calming factor. You know, he's older, he's been there, he's done this before. So he's very much a little bit of a calming factor to us.
In this day and age where pretty much people play three to four guards or perimeter people, where do you see Kyle fitting in? Is he a like the old school four? I know he could shoot the lights out.
Yeah, he'll play face up four for us. Him and Louis will play minutes at that position.
Gotcha.
And we could play him some at the five too. He's a very intelligent player, so you can play him at the five. Mm-hmm. He can shoot it. He can post you. He's very strong. He rebounds. So we could play him some minutes there too.
All right, Chris, anytime you land the leading scorer at a Division I program, that's a pretty good get, and you have one. In fact, I said leading scorer. He led the Patriot League, not just Loyola. He led the Patriot League in scoring, and we're talking about Deion Perry. What do you see as far as his role on this team is concerned?
Deion's going to play on and off the ball. So we're still working on trying to figure out what that best spot will be for him, and I'm kind of force-feeding him on and off the ball mm-hmm. because I want him to be able to play both spots. I like guards that can do that. You know, Caleb did that last year. Jasper did it last year. Jalen did it last year. I think your team is better when you have multiple guys that can do that. So like last year, you know, I'm going to force-feed him with that too and a couple other guys. But Deion's explosive. Like, he can get up and down the floor when the ball's in his hands. He can shoot the ball. He's tough to keep in front of you. He'll get minutes on and off the ball for us. And then defensively, we need him to be a pest. Like, he's just got to really get his hands on basketballs, get deflections, pressure the ball, and be a disruptive factor on the defensive end.
You brought in a player who had a good game against Fairfield last year. That would be Jamie Bergens, who played at Drexel this season as a Stag. He'll be playing against Drexel. Again, somebody who, when Joe and I have watched the practices, has looked pretty good. Where does he fit in?
Yeah, Jamie is another guy that I'm force-feeding on and off the ball. I think he can play. We have three guys, him, Braden Sparks, and Deion, I believe, can do that. Jamie's he's a man, you know, he's been around, he's a graduate student, he's physical, he's tough. He played with his national team this past summer. He's shooting the ball better, gets to the lane. He's tough when he gets to that lane because he's physical. You know, he gets his shoulder down on you and he gets to spots where he wants on the floor. And defensively he's rangy, like he's bigger than you think he is. And he guards the ball very well. So, I'm excited about him.
The fact that he was with his national team, did that is he a step behind everyone else as you guys practice now in the summertime?
He was not with us in the summer. So he had this opportunity to play with his national team with the Netherlands. Now, they didn't make the Olympics, but they played a number of games against teams that were in the Olympics. And it was first opportunity to play with that first team. So we had a conversation about it, and Joe, I mean, that's an absolute honor for that kid. So I said, you have to do that, Jamie. You can't worry about being here. Even though it's going to cost you some time not being with us, you'll get up to speed quick. You've done this before. So he did. He was with his national team. Now, he could have come back for the last 2 weeks of workouts in the summer, but I thought that was kind of pointless, you know, to have him do that. So he just stayed with his family, continued to work out with the national team, and then came in September. And he has not really been behind at all. You know, we're pretty simple with what we do. So we kind of got him caught up pretty quickly.
So you mentioned Deion Perry and Jamie Bergens. We haven't talked about Braden Sparks, but it sounds like you mentioned you have three guys that can play off the dribble. And again, for our listeners, I'm just trying to prep them and get a first step as to what they're going to see. Part of your offensive practice breakdown, are you going to do a lot more dribble drives than maybe you passed? Or
I mean,
such a luxury to have,
yeah,
the way the game is played.
Yeah, like to. Mm-hmm. You know, I call them logo drives. The league logo sits right in the middle of the lane, and I want to get to that logo off the dribble as much as possible. We wanted to do that last year, too. We did it some. I think we have a few more guys that can do that this year. So I'm hopeful that those three guys can do that within the context of what we're trying to do offensively. I also think Prophet Johnson can do that too. Prophet's been pretty good off the dribble too. So really I'm looking for those four guys to be guys that can get to the lane, get to the logo, create pitch threes, create fouling situations, or get to the rim. You know.
So you kind of opened up a bugaboo of mine. I constantly hear this day and age that teams want you to take the mid-range jumper because analytically, it's not as effective. I don't get it. So I'll give you a scouting report on one of your new opponents, Merrimack. Okay, having broadcasted them in the NEC, their whole thing is to not just to take contested threes, but they don't want you to take them. So they constantly challenge you to get in and take that pull-up jumper. Do you work on that, or is that just out the window now?
No, we work on it.
Good.
Like, I'm not – I mean, I think there's a place for analytics and statistics, and we use it a little bit. But here's my thing with that. Obviously, first of all, you're going to be in that situation in a game. You're going to be. You're going to have to drive the ball. The defense is going to rotate. The clock, shot clock's going to be down. You're going to have to be able to make a pull-up jump shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the guys that are good at it are very, very difficult to guard and get to their shot. I think Jamie's pretty good at that, and I think that Prophet's pretty good at it. And Dion and Braden are getting better at it. But I don't subscribe to that where, you know, I'd rather take, you know, more threes and more plays at the rim, but we also work on being able to shoot off the dribble because you need to be able to do it.
Good.
All right, two names we just heard mentioned a few times there, Braden Sparks and Prophet Johnson. Let's start with Braden. He took the circuitous route. Instead of JUCO to D1, he went D1 to JUCO, Indian Hills, and now back to Fairfield. So I was wondering how he landed on your radar, and what will he bring to the Stags?
So we were recruiting a kid from Triton, who was a very good team. At one point, I think they were the 10th-ranked team in the country. And Braden plays at another junior college called Indian Hills. That's where he played. Indian Hills is always very good, and mm-hmm. they were ranked in the country too. And we went and watched Coach Breaker went out and watched the Triton-Indian Hills game, and Braden played very well, better than the guy that we were mm-hmm. looking at. And we followed him, went out and saw him again, and then started recruiting him, and it worked out. He's a wonderful kid, extremely hardworking kid, and he's another guy that can play on and off the ball. He was in the low 40s from three last year at JUCO. So I think he's a guy that can make threes for us, and he can go off the dribble. He's good in screening situations, like when you run him off staggered screens or single doubles on the baseline. So I can see him being good at that this year. And he's a ball pressure guy. He can sit down and guard some.
Yeah, and I mentioned he went D1 to JUCO and now back to D1. He started at Mercer. I failed to mention that. So he's been around the block, and you know, Mercer's a pretty darn good program. So there's certainly some pedigree there. And Prophet Johnson, he filled it up at the JUCO level last year. So and then had a good year at Southern Utah. So scored JUCO. Southern Utah, good program. How did he get on your radar, and what will he bring to the table?
That was a portal situation. So, you know, when the portal hits and guys start going in there, it goes in at a fast pace, and, mm-hmm. you know, you really got to kind of keep up with it, and you have to, you know, go through the names and then go look at their numbers and go look at their clips on Synergy and watch them offensively, watch them defensively. And you're doing that with just about every guy. And then you're X-ing guys off and checking guys on. And, you know, he was a guy that we watched extensively. I liked his numbers in JUCO. Matty K spent some time looking at his film at Southern Utah, and he did some good things at Southern Utah. I liked the fact that he rebounded the ball at that guard spot, rebounded it really well. And he's tough and athletic. So, you know, we kind of watched him. We thought, you know, here's a guy that can play the way we play. He can use ball screens. He gets up and down the floor. He's athletic. They came on a visit. We liked him a lot as a person. A lot of good reports on him. So we went ahead and pulled the trigger, and he pulled the trigger on us. So we're excited to have him.
Yeah, 4 rebounds a game last season at Southern Utah. And we saw a really good rebounding guard last year in Jasper Floyd. So that's something, obviously, that would be a nice bonus if he could fill that role. McQuee Reek, he took a red shirt at Milwaukee. Now, you watch him practice, big, lanky wing, looks very athletic. And I was wondering, you know, where does he fit in as far as potential playing time is concerned? I know there are a lot of numbers on this team, but you look at him and you say, there's an athlete and a guy who definitely has good upside.
Yeah, he's on the come. He had a really, really good day yesterday. He redshirted his first year in Milwaukee because of an injury. And then by the time he got back, it was senseless for him to, you know, to go and play and waste a year. So he redshirted. Matty K had seen him in high school. He was a name out of high school. So we went ahead and started recruiting him. He could shoot the ball. He's long. He's athletic. He's in the process of learning. You know, he's had more basketball thrown at him in the last month and a half than he has in his whole career. So there's a little bit of a learning curve right there. To his credit, he is about all the right things. That kid is in the gym every day, getting extra shots, working on his game, as a number of our guys are. I like that about, you know, we had yesterday off, and not yesterday, day before off, and the gym was filled. There was guys in there, you know, during the day and at night. So I like that about McQueen, and I feel like he's going to be very, very good. And I think he's going to be a little up and down to start until he, you know, gets it figured out. But I like him a lot. I think he's got a chance to be good.
Noah Best, a late signee, came on board midsummer, highly recruited, and ended up at Fordham. So he's a Fairfield Stag, and where does he fit into the picture?
So I had seen Noah in high school. He played out at Mount St. Michael in the Bronx, and I kind of liked him. I thought he played with – he was long, athletic guard, played with an edge to him, rebounded, could guard, good in transition and physical around the basket, a little more of a driver than shooter. But I think he's a guy that, you know, he's an energy guy. You throw him in games, and he's going to lift the level of the game and the energy level of the game. Especially on the defensive end and on the offensive glass. So he's very capable. So he could see minutes also.
I nicknamed him 38 because every time I see him, it reminds me of the 38 I used to drop on his high school every time we played.
Joe was sitting on that line since we started this podcast. There's a player who has a lot of Fairfield fans intrigued. He's sort of an unknown quantity right now. Kid out of Bridgeport Prep, which is not one of the names of the preps or even the high schools around here that immediately comes to mind. But his name is Isaac Munkati. He has a D1 body. I think he is, as you like to say, Chris, a work in progress. But there seems to be some pretty good upside here. How would you characterize his potential?
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to be very, very good. He's got good hands, good feet, which is unusual for a guy for his size at a young age. Plays extremely hard, works hard, rebounds the ball. I think 5 rebounds in 11 minutes on Saturday in our scrimmage. So fouls a little bit too much right now. You know, he's got to get used to the speed of the game and be a little bit better there. Capable around the basket, has a little bit of a shooting touch too. So he's at the beginning stages of what he's going to be. And he's one of those guys that you look at him and you go, wow, I want to coach that because I want to see what we can turn him into. And I think he's got a chance to be very good.
Well, I'm looking at Barima Sek. I'm looking at Peyton Smith and Kyle Jenkins. You already mentioned could play 4-5. Is Munkati a possible redshirt player that maybe give him a year to develop?
Right now, no, but it's not out of the question either. Mm-hmm.
The returning bigs, Barima and Peyton, we're going to take them together here. I'm going to ask this question and lay out for your answer. Their improvement since the end of last season is most noticeable in what area?
Probably ability around the basket, and with Peyton, I would say conditioning. Both of them need to rebound better. That's going to be important for us. I think defensively they have a good idea of what we're doing. Peyton's very good in ball screen coverage. He knows what we're trying to do. They've both gotten better around the basket. And like I said, Peyton's conditioning has gotten much better from this time last year. If you saw him this time last year, he was not ready for Division I basketball. But he's got his body in shape, and he's got himself in shape. So both of those guys are going to see minutes, and we're going to need him to play well.
Last but not least, and I saved him for last because one of my questions was going to be who is the loudest voice in practice, but we've been to enough practices to know that the answer to that question is Louis Bleachmore. He is your verbal leader, and he's your leader. I'll say right now a de facto captain, but you can answer that as well. Who are the captains? But let's specifically talk about Louis, who clearly is one of the guys in front here. What is he going to bring, not only in terms of basketball, and please address that, but in terms of leadership as well?
Yeah, so Louis has really made a concerted effort to step into that vacuum that we lost of leadership. I thought, you know, Caleb did a great job of leading us last year from wire to wire, and we got some contributions there from some other guys, Jalen Leach, Jasper Floyd, but Caleb really did a great job of that. So there's a vacuum, you know, with missing those guys, and Louis made a real effort to step into it and has done a good job with it. Captains we have not selected yet. I'm not quite sure what direction I'm going with that. At this point, with so many new guys, I thought it was important to really get a look at everybody. And then Louis, you know, I think one of the things that you'll see him do is play with more experience, you know, play like an experienced player. You know, last year was really his first year of Division I basketball. He had very minimal minutes at St. Joe's before he transferred to us. And he came from junior college. So he stepped into last year into a role, and really it was kind of new to him. He did a good job of handling it, and I think he's going to give us more this year just from the experience level. He certainly works hard every day. He's in the gym all the time working on his game, very coachable, really good with the other guys on the floor. But I really think that experience part's going to help him a lot and makes him play with a little more confidence and a little more poise.
What have you learned about this team in the couple of scrimmages that you've played? And I asked that question full well knowing you won't really know some of the answers you're seeking until you play Rhode Island on Monday. But what have the scrimmages taught you?
Yeah, I think after the first scrimmage, I kind of gave him the Brad Underwood speech that he gave his team at Illinois. Like, I thought offensively we were pretty good, but defensively we did not have a grasp of what we were doing. So at that point, we spent the next couple weeks for the next scrimmage and really working on some things defensively. And it got better. I thought we were very good Saturday defensively. Not perfect, but definitely a step up. And I can see the payback from it right now in practice. We've gotten a little more aggressive, a little more physical. And that's where I said earlier in the broadcast that now the offense now has to take another step up to meet the level that the defense is playing at. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing I learned. I thought everybody, if you look at both scrimmages, every guy in the roster gave us a little something in either both scrimmages or one of the scrimmages. So again, it hasn't really given you an extremely clear picture of delineating, you know, who's who at this point. I think we need some more games for that. But I really liked the intensity level we played with in both scrimmages. I thought we played hard. I thought our unity was good. And, Bob, that's the thing that right now that I'm going after more than anything else. I just want effort, attitude, playing hard, getting after it, being about each other. That's got to be a foundation. If you can't get that as a foundation, you can draw all the X and O up you want in the world. It's not going to make a difference. So that's the primary emphasis right now, particularly with this group. I said to them, last year's group, the challenge was get healthy, stay healthy, and develop some depth. That was that challenge. They had the unity part. They bought into that right away, and it remained throughout the season. This group has is a little more deeper in terms of roster, you know, of numbers of guys you can throw at people. Their challenge is going to be, how do you guys get the unity part? How much are you going to be about each other? How much are you going to be more happy for the guy's success next to you than you are for your own? Are you going to be a guy that, you know, maybe you give us a minimal contribution on Tuesday, but when we push a button on Friday, you're ready to go? That's going to be the real challenge for this group. And that's why I say our baseline has got to be that playing hard, playing together part before we can advance anywhere else. And I think we're getting that to a point. I kind of like where we're at with that. So we just have to keep preaching that, keep pushing that, and then I think the basketball is going to follow suit and get better.
Some general items before we put a wrap on things. The MAC preseason poll, which is the coaches' vote, has Fairfield penciled in as the fourth pick. Quinnipiac is the preseason favorite, followed by Marist, Iona, and then the Stags, and then St. Peter's comes in at fifth. You got one first-place vote. Do you get the sense that maybe some outsiders might be overlooking the Stags? Let's start with Rhode Island. Maybe they're overlooking the Stags. Is this a group? Is because everything, especially in the MAC, almost every roster, except Quinnipiac, stayed fairly stable, but it seems every roster has had radical turnover. But I think the Stags showed what they can do last year by winning 24 games, but because of the turnover factor, you think sometimes people lose the Stags in the shuffle when they take a look at them?
You know, Bob, I know what you're getting at with that, and I'm not giving you a coach speak answer on this. I really pay very little attention to that stuff. I really do. I don't subscribe to who was picked where. I don't really pay a lot of attention of who signed who in the league. I really try to put most of my energies and my attention into us. And are we getting better? Are we playing together? Are we playing hard enough? What do we need to get better at? That's really what my focus is. So I don't go into a game thinking we're getting overlooked. I don't go into a game thinking, oh, we're favored. I just try to prepare us the same way every game, every single practice, every day. And then I think you reap some benefits from that. Because really, I'm very, very much 80% about us, 85% about us, and 15 to 20% about, who's in the league, who's the opponent, who's, I tend to gravitate towards that idea and pay more attention to us.
Yeah, which is exactly what we would expect to hear. And the formula worked very well last year, but fans like to talk about those kinds of things. So we got it on the record. You have a new assistant coach, Matt Scott. Well, you're very familiar with him from your time at Niagara. But what was it about Matt you saw as far as his coaching ability is concerned that made you bring him in?
Yeah, we're excited to have Matt, and we're fortunate to open up another spot. Paul Schlickman really helped us with that, and Dr. Nemec, and it opened another position on the staff, and the first guy I thought of was him. Some of those listening may recall him from my days at Niagara. He was a three-time All-League guy, Brooklyn guy. And he was constantly talking on the court, constantly talking in practice. He was one of those guys where if there was a pickup game that was played and you just played an hour and a half of pickup, some guys would sit down and get some water and start conversing, and he would still be under the basket conversing with them, but flipping the ball up and, taking a couple shots. And he loves the game of basketball, and he loves to be around it. And I just felt like, here's a guy that knows me, knows what we're going to do and what it's going to be like, and is going to work at it and be loyal. So I'm really, really excited, and I feel fortunate. I feel fortunate about our whole staff. I think we have an outstanding staff, and I feel fortunate that he's joining us, and I get to do this with him.
So, Chris, what would be his role? Will he take on all the responsibilities of an assistant coach, scouting, recruiting, the whole bit?
Yeah, so the rules have changed a little bit, so you can put another guy on the road. So Matt's already been on the road a little bit, and we're starting to expose him to recruiting. This year will be a little bit of a learning process for him, and then hopefully by the time we hit next summer's recruiting, he can just run with it. He does a great job in practice. He spends a lot of time with the guys getting extra shots up, and has good relationships with the guys on the team. And then he'll have some administrative responsibilities along with that.
And is he the best guard in the court?
I don't know, Joe. I don't know if he put 38 on Mount, so maybe it would be you if we get you out there. He still plays, though. He was, before we got him up here, he was in all the New York leagues. Uh-huh. He was down at West 4th and Dyckman and playing down at the Piers. So he still loves to play.
Yeah, he looks like he still has some game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know what part of the podcast we have reached? We have reached that part where we ask Joe if he has any final words.
Before we go into that, Bob, I'm really disappointed you haven't brought the World Series up, Bob, being a Met fan. So, you know,
I don't want to go there.
I'm disappointed on that.
We've had a pretty much of a kumbaya get together here.
103 wins on the year, best record in the American League. Were competitive in every game against the Dodgers, who, to be honest with you, were the better team.
Yeah,
from start to finish.
It's a tough lineup, boy.
I went into the World Series saying that the Dodgers were the better team. Anything we can do will be just gravy. And fortunately for me, I got to see a couple of exciting games. I went to all the playoff games, the three World Series home games. The first one was a bore. I thought I was at a Pirates afternoon game in July. I had nothing to cheer, but the last two were exciting. So, again, I'm one of those Yankee fans where I would give up my right pinky finger for a world championship, but I love them, win or lose. And anyway, back to
we're not going to let those be the final words.
Your just general thoughts on the two new teams, Merrimack and Sacred Heart, especially Sacred Heart, being that they're across the street.
Yeah, I think it's good that the league adds and it stays healthy. You know, this is a time in college basketball where there's a lot of movement from league to league, and leagues are losing teams, you know. So I think it's great that the MAC has strengthened itself with two good programs. Sacred Heart, obviously, we're familiar with. We've played them over the last few years. You know, that's going to add a little bit of rivalry, you know, in addition to Quinnipiac because of, you know, region.
Sure.
So I think that's a great thing. And Merrimack, I don't know a lot about. I know Joe does a great job with them. They're very, very good. I know they're good in that zone. I haven't seen much of them, but they're well coached. They'll play hard, and they'll be a great opponent, and they'll be a great addition to our league.
Chris, we always appreciate the time you give us. You always are cooperative. You're never in a rush, and you give us great answers. And we're thrilled to be back for not only another season of Fairfield basketball, but sitting down every other week with you to do this podcast. Thanks again for the time you spent with us.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me. I really enjoy these conversations. And, you know, to everybody that's listening out there, I really want to make, and we took a big step forward on it last year, but I'd really love to take another step forward this year and make Mahoney Arena the most difficult place in the league to play. And, you know, anybody that's listening, get to the games and bring 10 friends with you. And let's pack that place every game. You're going to see a group of guys that are going to play really, really hard for you and play very competitively for you. So get out and see them play, support them, and keep helping us raise the energy level in that gym and make it a difficult place to play for opponents.
And that all starts on Friday night, November 15th, when the Stags play John Jay. And that'll do it for this edition of Open Court with Fairfield coach Chris Casey. The Open Court podcast is presented by Connecticut Basement Systems. The season opener is this Monday, November 4th, as the Stags visit URI. They take on the Roding Rams, and then it's two more road games to follow, Saturday, November 9th at Georgetown, and then Tuesday, November 12th at New Hampshire. Our next podcast will drop shortly before the home opener. We just mentioned it, Friday night, November 15th, against John Jay. So for Chris Casey, for the Fairfield Hall of Famer Joe DeSantis, and our podcast engineers today, Zach Dayton and Drew Kingsley, sitting in and doing a great job, I'm Bob Huesler. Thanks for listening to Open Court.